Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy belated 4th of July to you.
Yes, I hope you had a great 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, it snuck up on us fast, as it does sometimes, but... And here we are once again doing our Declaration of Singularity show after the fact, right? So, and once again, as last week, we're doing Amazing Tuesdays rather than Wednesdays because this is going to be a two-show week. But, I think the amazing, if you started on Tuesday, it carries right through to Wednesday. That was the vibe I got last week. And I think, you know, I think that's going to hold true this week.
Well, we just have to amp up the amazing is all. That's all. You know, so
that's all we have to do. And lately we've been doing it. I think we've been very consistent about cranking it up. And you know what's fun is last year, I don't know if you recall what we called our Declaration of Singularity show. It was not called the Declaration of Singularity. Do you remember what we called it?
I do not remember. Remind me.
The name of the show was the Declaration of Awesomeness. So
that's pretty great. I like
that. We could have done Awesome Wednesdays too. You know, it just I think amazing sort of stuck. I don't know. It's become the word. So we've been doing an amazing show every week. But you know, the Declaration of Awesomeness, Declaration of Amazing. I don't know. We'll have to take it up a notch next year. I'm not sure. Anyway, I got a year to plan. Right. That's the key there. But you know, the thing we want to do is we want to keep raising the bar on this stuff. Okay. Well, so for those who have only started listening to The World Transformed recently, welcome new listeners, of course. But those who don't have the history, I wrote a post called The Declaration of Singularity many years ago on The Speculist, and have carried it over to The World Transformed, and we trot it out usually once a year around the 4th of July and talk about it. It is obviously a rewrite of The Declaration of Independence. And the purpose of the Declaration of Singularity is just to, take one sweeping change from the past, very positive, I think, very good, sweeping, big, monumental, disruptive change from the past, and use it to kind of frame an even bigger, much bigger change that we're anticipating in the future. So that's what this is. We took the...
I think it's always worth noting that it was... It's certainly not your intention to lampoon the Declaration of Independence. We've had a couple of people over the years act as though you were, and that was not your intent at all.
Right. And I, while it's not lampooning the Declaration of Independence, it's also not offered seriously. I don't believe anyone will ever make any such declaration. It won't be necessary, right? But the language in it, I think... helps us to kind of understand turning that corner, right? In particular, the part of the Declaration I'd like to focus on this time out, and we may have done this in the past too, but because it's really fun to swap out all men are created equal with all sentient beings of human level or greater intelligence. You know, those are the fun ones to do, but where you really get to the case. Where Thomas Jefferson really got to the case on the Declaration of Independence is when he lists his laundry list of offenses against England, against, in particular the king, but really against Great Britain overall. And in the Declaration of Singularity, we raise these issues against our current, I describe it as post-industrial age. So what's so wrong with the world we live in that we need this sweeping revolution? Well, I'm going to read just that section of the Declaration, and Stephen, you can comment as to whether we're making appropriate progress on these areas. So here's what it says. It says, in the face of unrelenting progress, this civilization has continued to hearken back to a, quote, natural limitation of development which must never be challenged. It has promoted and enforced harmful and prejudicial distinctions between human and non-human intelligence. It has set artificial and arbitrary limits as to duration of lifespan. It has enforced meaningless distinctions between labor and leisure. It has equipped despotic governments and enterprises to restrict the means of production and self-expression to a limited few. And it has promoted the creation of artificial boundaries between creative minds. What do you think? Those charges still hold, one, and two, how are we doing on, you know, working our way out of those problems, if they are, if in fact
I would say we have not worked our way into these problems yet, to some extent. What we're talking about here is a future where, you know, we have AI that is of human level intelligence or greater, and we're not quite there yet. So, for example, prejudicial distinction between human and non-human intelligence, that sort of bigotry is not a problem when there is no human-level AI, right?
Right.
That's true. And so we haven't really gotten our – we don't have this problem yet. You're anticipating a problem that I think that no doubt we will see. But we haven't gotten there yet. Unless,
like in retrospect, in the rearview mirror, we decide that we should have been treating dolphins differently all along.
Yeah, or maybe elephants or great apes or something. You know.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. And that's quite possible. That's quite possible that we decide that at some point. It has set artificial and arbitrary limits to the duration of lifespan. You know, I think we are beginning to see, Phil, serious efforts to extend life health span or lifespan,
right.
We're just now getting there. We're dipping our toe in those waters, and so it's really that's the problem that's still in front of us. The problem we have right now is that. We don't have the limits that we face are the limits that nature has put in front of us. So we're trying to overcome those limits at this
yeah,
still.
Yeah, and in
so,
fact, that one is pretty provocatively stated because what up to this point, what it's really done is it has just signed off on the existing limits. Right. That's what our civilization is doing right now. It's just, well, that's the limit. And,
And invariably, if anyone passes away that's over the age of 75, you know, you'll hear people comforting one another with the idea that, well, at least they lived a full life or this or that.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is you've still lost somebody. And and so I think at some point we'll reach a point where we understand that. Regardless of how many years someone has lived, when we lose them, it is really an equal tragedy. And so, to some extent, I don't know if I'm expressing myself well there.
I agree. We're still losing a human being, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, you can rationalize it all you want. I mean, and people don't, you know, if somebody's 27, right, and somebody else is 25,
right.
And you say, well, right, nobody says that, well, hey, you know, the 27-year-old, at least he got two more years, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? But for some reason, if it's 87 and, you know, 15, then it's like it was okay that the 87-year-old person died. And really, that's actually the arbitrary distinction, I guess, right?
Right.
Somewhere we just decide you're old enough. And it's not that big a deal if you die. And I think that's really the mindset.
We've had a friend on the show, and I'm sorry I can't recall the name of the guest, who said once that when a person dies, a library burns, right?
Yep.
The idea being that, you know, in addition to losing the person, you are losing all the experiences, all the, you know, you know, there's a library of information inside that person's brain, and that is gone. you could actually argue that the person who's older has a bigger library. I mean, so I don't, you know, I'm saying that, you know, when you lose someone at any age, it's a tragedy. And so perhaps we'll our attitudes towards that will change as we're able to address, you know, our lifespans. I think our attitudes may change towards.
Also, you lose that direct connection to the past, which is really hard to express, but it's important. You know, I remember something that's always struck me from the Ken Burns miniseries on PBS, The Civil War. When he's talking about it, towards the end of this show, he's talking about Lincoln's funeral. And, you know, it sort of made this tour. It went all over the country, right? And it went to New York City. And, you know, the funeral procession is going down probably Park Avenue. And a young boy is out on the balcony of one of these apartments looking down on the whole thing. And it's Teddy Roosevelt, right? And it's it's like this, we go, okay, well, so Teddy Roosevelt was there to see when Lincoln died, you know? And I always thought, well, like, my grandfather was, you know, born into the world where Teddy Roosevelt was doing his stuff, you know? And so I got to live at the same time as my grandfather. You know, it's like the overlap sort of continues. When people die, you lose that connection, right? You get one step further and one step further and one step further.
It's the idea of living memory, right? I mean, when my father was born, there were some very elderly people that were around that he got to meet and know as a very young person that remembered the Civil War.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
And of course, the Civil War has passed from living memory. World War One is pretty much passed from living memory.
Right.
At least there are no veterans of that conflict, to my knowledge, that are still around.
We're seeing World War II rapidly pass from living memory.
We're losing those folks. So, that's our history. And obviously, it's a bad thing to lose those folks. So, yeah.
One more charge. It has equipped despotic governments and enterprises to restrict the means of production and self-expression to a limited few. And I think this really does apply both to the post-industrial age and to the industrial age before it. It's, you know, the technologies that potentially could be liberating us haven't gotten us that far yet. But this is also the area where we've probably made the most progress, right? Where
A couple of guys decide they want to do a radio show or a podcast like this. Hey, we did it. And, you can, if you want to publish, you can certainly get out on the internet and do that. Even my kids are creating things on the internet and publishing it. So there's just a lot of we've made a lot of progress in that particular
one. Yeah, that's the one that's really started pushing us forward, I think. To the extent that the other problems get created so that we can overcome them, this is the piece that's kind of pushed that into motion, right? It's the progress we've made that we've made there with people having greater access to technology, being able to connect with each other, being able to express themselves, being able to make things. All of that, I think, kind of cascades into a world where, suddenly rather than just rubber stamping the existing age limit, we really will face a time when people say, well, maybe you should only be able to live so old to such an age. Maybe people should only be so capable, should know so much. Those will be interesting discussions that we'll have sometime in the future. But meanwhile, it's good to know that we have made some progress towards our new civilization that comes, as it says in the Declaration, at some point unnamed in the future. So that's it for the Declaration of Singularity. Let's move on and talk about some other news stories that point us in the direction of amazing, right? So what are some other things that show us how we're taking on these capabilities?
Well, we got a story here, Phil. Chisels to genes. How we'll soon grow what we used to build. I think this is a fascinating idea. I mean, can you imagine furniture, for example, that you literally grow? Because you can tinker with the genes to make that happen. That's interesting.
I can totally imagine it because I've read science fiction about it for, you know, since I was a kid, right? I mean, it's been an idea that Harry Harrison, in his books, West of Eden, he did that whole series. It was this alternate Earth where the dinosaurs and humans coexisted. But one of the interesting things was the intelligent humanoid dinosaurs who lived on the Eastern Hemisphere, and actually it was in the Western Hemisphere where apes evolved into humans. But anyway, these intelligent dinosaurs, their whole technology was based on biotech. So they grew their cities. You know, everything they did was through genetic manipulation. And he came up with some really, really novel like things you could do with this. But if you're not familiar with the ideas, there's a fantastic quote in this story that we've got linked here. It says, as George Church has suggested, a minuscule fertilized whale egg produces an object as big as a house. So maybe one day we can program an organism or batch of them to produce not the whale, but the actual house. And I think that people are really starting to take this idea seriously. We're hearing this a lot more. You know, we talked about some videos, a couple months ago, where this was an idea that seemed to keep popping up. People talking about the future are talking increasingly about this kind of organic, biological way of building structures and building things. It's also not quite as exotic and not quite as attention-getting. It's probably going to be truly going to be the way we synthesize chemicals in the future, right? It's like any product.
I had a funny discussion with my kids about something like this, but it's probably been a year ago at least. And they were just talking about, you know, growing houses like this. And they said, well, you know, this could be, you could take this to a gross extreme. You know, if it's a still living, you know, pulsating organism or something, you know, instead of a front door, it's a sphincter, you know, and you get ready to go and it excretes you into the lawn, you know.
The front door should be like the mouth. The back door would be the sphincter, right? I mean, that's how that works.
Exactly. Well, you just don't, you know, we don't want that.
No, we do not want that. That's pretty gross. Yeah, well, it's kind of like the crude representation of this was in the Flintstones, right? Speaking of East of Eden or West of Eden. Remember in the Flintstones where all the machines were animals doing different things, right? But they weren't bioengineered or anything. They just happened to be like a dinosaur that coincidentally looked like a sink, right? Or, you know, whatever whatever problem it was.
Or the crane or whatever that Fred was working on at the rock pit or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, that idea is, the creepy side of it really would be not so much going into the mouth and coming out the other end as much as you wouldn't want, I mean, there'd be ethical concerns, right, about developing really intelligent organisms to do things. Did you ever watch Farscape?
No, I did not.
One of the tropes in that show, and it's something that also shows up in the Wild Card series of books by George R. R. Martin, is that the starships are actually living things, right? They're that's like the ultimate biotechnology. This species that has evolved into, and I think they were called leviathans, right? So it was like a whale, and it's like you're inside this living creature, and you're symbiotically, you know, you have formed this relationship with it, and then it'll take you. It'll take you where you want to go in the universe. Well, that is such a cool idea, and you love that so much. But, of course, any creature that powerful and that sophisticated, it really would have to be a symbiotic relationship, right? Otherwise, you're just talking about a new form of slavery, pretty much. So, there's all those potential issues. But I doubt we'll be applying it to spacecraft anytime soon, you know. I think a tree that produces its own treehouse, something like that, is probably the wildest it'll get in the near future.
In the near future, yeah. I could see having a genetically engineered type wood based plant that could produce wood furniture, and I would think that what it would produce would be, you know, it would be more interesting perhaps than than what we would produce out of wood, right? If it's growing it, and it'd be made in different ways. Obviously, it wouldn't look like something that we've hacked and then pieced together. It would be one big piece, and that you can make some beautiful organic type furniture that way. I think it'd be
interesting. Well, yeah, you can imagine things being naturally curved, right, rather than you know, being at angles or having to be smoothed down to it, naturally smoothed down to exactly the right shape. Yeah, there actually is a lot of potential there. Once you get the handle on that genome and you get it cranking out whatever it is that you want to crank out. Anyhow, it's a wonderful, you know, kind of imagination challenging idea, and truly a signal. I think the fact that this idea is being taken more and more seriously is definitely a sign that we're heading towards a more amazing future. Well, how about this one? You saw this, I'm sure. Our good friend George Dvorsky piece over on, I think it was Gizmodo, your self-driving car will be programmed to kill you. Deal with it. Okay, now first off, why in the world am I including this in a show that's supposed to be upbeat, declaration of amazing, happy, happy, happy? Well, here's why. Here's why I'm including this is because I'm really disappointed on the angle that that article takes.
It's a provocative title. It's meant to get people to read
clickbait,
it.
Clickbait, right? Yeah. Clickbait. But even the gist of the story, I think, kind of misses the point. If I were gonna write the headline, you want to be provocative. You say this: your self-driving car will be programmed to kill you, and here's why that isn't a problem. Now that's provocative, right? Somebody will click on that. How about this? Your self-driving car will be programmed to kill you, and that's totally amazing, right? I mean,
we should probably explain what it is we're talking about here.
What we're talking about is a car. It sounds like Phil wants me dead. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Because we're excited about it even. No,
Phil's always had a problem.
We're talking,
with you. No, that's not it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What we're talking about, obviously, is a car that maximizes the good for as many people as possible. And so, if you're driving down a lonely highway somewhere, and your self-driving car is driving you, and something happens, and you know, the car will do everything in its power to save your life, okay?
Right.
If, however, you know, you're in a situation where you're barreling towards a crowd of people, and the options are, you know, go off into this lake and potentially drown the occupant, or plow into this group of 20 people, your self-driving car will
put you in the lake. It will put you in the lake. That's right. And
that's a good thing. And the reason it's a good thing is because, you know, you've endangered one person, the person in the car, and not the crowd of 20 people.
Yeah, the thing is, you have to remember that you're as likely to be one of the 20 people inadvertently standing in the road for whatever reason as you are the person in the car. Yeah. So that car has then saved your life as soon as you're in that other mode. But the other reason I say this is this is actually good news is because, look, there's two alternatives, okay? There's two ways of looking at this. Either you as a human being would swerve off into the lake yourself, okay?
Right.
In which case, the car is just going to do that for you anyway and do it more safely and with a better chance of you surviving than you'd ever be able to do it. Or you wouldn't do that. You would plow into those people because you're more interested in saving yourself. If the latter, okay, you're a jerk, and we don't have to worry about your argument. Okay, I'm sorry, but anybody who's taking that line, I don't care what you think about flying cars or you know, self-driving cars or anything else. You should be a nicer person. Okay, but I think most people would say that's what they would do, right? They would drive into the lake. So now you're going to do it in a car that will be 1,000 times less likely to ever get you into that situation. Right, and that will
to begin with.
Your life
that's right.
1,000 times yeah. over before that situation ever occurs.
And you know, this self-driving car, at least generation two or three on down the road from us, Phil, will know that there's a crowd of people three blocks ahead, and probably will ride around it. You know, and so that's long before you as a driver would know there's a crowd of 20 people or whatever in the road. You know, because you can't, you know, it'll route around it before you even get close enough to see it. So that's these cars will be so much safer.
These principles have to be built in, right? They have to be built in because these cases will come up. But this is really an ethics 101 thought experiment, right?
Right.
You spend your whole life dealing with traffic issues, right? How often does this really come up, right?
Never.
How often?
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
It doesn't happen, really.
In 20 years of practice, I started in 97, so 20 years next year, hasn't come up one time. So this is a real hypothetical kind of deal. This is, Phil, you've been driving longer than I've been practicing law. So how often have you had to make that kind of life or death decision?
I have never had to make that decision.
Well, and that's fortunate because that would have meant that you plowed into the group of people because you're still here, right?
I've never encountered it. Yeah, that's right. No, exactly. So it's something that never occurs anyway. And when the self-driving cars are driving, it's going to occur even less than it currently does, which is close to zero. But what will happen almost certainly is you will be at less risk for being harmed all the time when you're in that self-driving car, right? So you're talking about you're talking about trading this palpable, tangible, daily benefit for this obscure, bizarre risk that means nothing, right? And this is where people get confused. So when you say the car is going to be programmed to kill you, it's just like, no, it's not. It's going to be programmed to save as many lives as it can, right? That's what it's going to be programmed. And that's what you want.
Here's the thing you can say. It will not make a distinction between the value of the lives in the car versus the value of the lives outside the car.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I'm driving my family here. These people are the most important people in my world. And therefore I'm going to, I'll plow into the group of 20 rather than go off in the drink. Well, would you – okay, I hear you. But would you ever subject the risk of your family to riding in a cab together? Because, you are giving that decision to a human driver who may very well decide to go off in the lake, right? So, again – the car won't make a distinction between the value of human lives, inside or outside the car. But that's, I say that if you value your family, you will get in that self-driving car every time rather than drive yourself.
Because it will be better at taking care of your family.
It will be better.
It could be, period.
Yep.
That's right. That is the bottom line on that. And you know what, Stephen, we have somehow managed to take up all of our time just on these three topics of amazingness. That's the problem with talking about amazing. You can either do quantity or quality, right? And we've done our share of quantity shows where we try to work through six or seven, but tonight we had to focus on quality. We had to really get into the Declaration of Singularity, the chisels versus genes, and of course the why it's good news that the self-driving car will be programmed to kill you. Well, and we are on a short week again this week, as we have been for the last 2 weeks, but Thursday we're going to do our Other Geek special. And, in fact, Thursday is going to be a total geek show. We're going to be other geeking for the full show. So we hope you'll be able to join us for that. We look forward to talking to you. Thanks, Stephen. Always great talking with you. And until next time, live to see it.